Welcome to episode 41 of the Fredcast for the week of October 30th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to the 41st episode of the Fredcast. Among this week's news, a German challenger to Interbike, possible collapse of the Puerto case, the 2007 tour route is announced, an important recall, and did Lance foul the swimming hole? Following the news, a follow-up to last week's story on riding at night, an interview with Gary Rossi from Ride Across California, some upcoming events, shout-outs, and PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast and our 41st episode. Glad to have you with me once again. Well, just as I was about to start recording the news for this week's show, I got an email from listener Craig, who completely changed the order of the news, because I want to bring you this first story that Craig brought to me. And this one is about the possibility of a challenger to Interbike in 2007. We've talked about Interbike here before. That is the bicycle industry trade show that takes place every fall, typically in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we just finished Interbike, and if you listened for the last couple of weeks, you know that I did four shows from there, did a lot of great interviews, both at the outdoor demo and at the expo itself. But now comes word from both Bicycle Retailer and Velo News that Interbike is going to have possibly some competition in 2007. It seems that the organizers of Eurobike, which is one of the bicycle industry trade shows that takes place in Germany every year, specifically in Friedrichshafen, Germany, they're thinking about having a competing trade show in 2007 in Portland, Oregon, in the northwest of the United States. According to the story, German manager said that the time is, quote, ripe for a new event. According to Bicycle Retailer, and this is something that's been going on and sort of simmering under the surface for a while, there's growing discontent with Las Vegas as a venue among exhibitors and retailers. And the folks from Friedrichshafen are hoping that they'll be able to capitalize on that discontentment. Their plan is to not only have an expo, but also to have an outdoor demo. Just like Interbike, they're looking at a two-day outdoor demo, either at nearby Ski Bowl or at perhaps a venue near the Hood River. So this could really throw the cycling industry into a tizzy. Where are people going to go? Are they going to go to Interbike, or are they going to go to, I don't know what they're going to call this one, so we'll call it Eurobike of the United States. Now, they have not set dates for the show, according to Bicycle Retailer, but they are saying it's going to be held sometime in mid-September. So this is a really, really big change in the trade show scene in the cycling industry in the United States. My big question is whether or not they'll actually have something that a lot of you have emailed me about. Will they have consumer days, days when normal cyclists, everyday cyclists like you and me, will be able to walk the show and see the newest, latest, greatest products? That would be really, really cool. So I think this is going to be a developing story, something we're going to talk about a lot here over the next coming months, and we'll see how it pans out and whether or not this is going to be something that will really challenge Interbike. Now, years ago, there was another challenger to Interbike, and while it did not succeed, it certainly did bring about some changes in the way that Interbike does business. For one thing, Interbike was primarily at the Anaheim Convention Center in Anaheim, California, near Disneyland, and now they're in Las Vegas, which is where the competing trade show was. So we'll see how this pans out. Interbike has certainly had competition in the past. They haven't been around and survived for 25 years for nothing, so we have no idea what's going to happen, but I'll keep you posted. Over the last several months, as you well know, our sport, the sport of cycling, has been living underneath a cloud. The cloud really became public knowledge and knowledge outside the cycling community the day before the start of the 2006 Tour de France, when it became known that over 50 cyclists in the Pro Peloton were being investigated for their connection to a scandal that was just then breaking out of Spain called Operación Puerto, surrounding the Liberty Seguros team manager Manolo Saiz and the doctor Eufemiano Fuentes. You remember that some of the tour's top contenders, guys like Jan Ullrich, Ivan Basso, Vinokourov, were not allowed to participate in the 2006 Tour de France as a result of the Puerto affair. This has been going on for quite some time. It's the thing that has caused all of your friends and family to tell you that cyclists are dopers, that the sport of cycling is dirty, and that the guys who are out there in the pro peloton really are only there because they're on the juice. Why am I reminding you of all of this? Simply because last week, a judge in Spain determined that the evidence in the Operación Puerto affair could not be used as the basis for sporting punishments against any of the implicated cyclists. In other words, this is the reason why Ivan Basso was cleared recently to go back to professional cycling, because out of a procedural matter, the judge in the case has said, yes, you can use this evidence in legal proceedings against guys like Fuentes and Saiz, but you cannot use it in a case that would be adjudicated in the sporting world. This evidence is now completely sealed. It's not being given out to the cycling bodies. They're not allowed to use it. This is a procedural detail that's keeping the evidence from being used, but it means also that those guys who were barred from this year's Tour de France potentially should never have been barred from the Tour de France. Their livelihoods, their careers, their reputations have been dragged through the mud because of what? We don't know, because we can't look at the evidence anymore. Is there a possibility that this evidence could be allowed to be used at some point in the future? Yes. According to several people out there in the cycling world who have a lot of contacts with these teams, some of this evidence that we can't look at is quite compelling. Some of it, not so much. We may never know. So it's going to be very peculiar to see what happens over the next couple of weeks and months. Because remember, some of these teams, take Liberty Seguros, for instance. That team doesn't exist anymore. It's now called Astana, and it's got a lot of Kazakh riders out of Kazakhstan. Other teams, take Phonak, for instance, doesn't exist anymore. So a lot of these riders were forced to leave their teams, forced to lose their livelihoods. For what? Well, we're not quite sure. Could it come back again? Yes, it could. But for now, it looks like a lot of these riders could be reinstated into the world of professional cycling very, very soon. Meanwhile, the directors of the Pro Tour cycling teams met in Paris last week and called for DNA testing of the riders that were implicated in the Puerto affair. Basically, what they're saying is they want these riders, before January 1st, 2007, and before they're allowed to sign a contract, to undergo DNA testing to prove once and for all that their blood was not among the samples that were taken from the Fuentes lab in Spain. Several of these riders, chief among them Jan Ullrich and Ivan Basso, have already refused to take DNA tests, basically because they're saying that they're innocent until proven guilty and they shouldn't have to do so. Nevertheless, if the teams do stick to this and say that you can't sign a contract until you've undergone the DNA testing, well, I have a feeling that they will probably cave, because let's face it, this is their livelihood. This is what they do to support themselves and feed their families. Looks like so far that the teams are going to stick to this, and it will be very interesting to see what happens over the next coming weeks, whether or not these riders do undergo the DNA testing and what the results are. Right on cue, the organizers of the Tour de France had their announcement last week of this year's tour route. It includes 6 mountain stages, 11 flat stages, 3 summit finishes, 21 passes, 2 individual time trials, and 2 rest days. Conspicuously missing, once again, a team time trial. This year's tour is going to begin on Saturday, July the 7th, with a prologue of 8 kilometers in London. The next day, on the 8th of July, Stage 1 goes from London to Canterbury, and this is the first time the Tour de France has ever begun in Great Britain, and so I think that it's going to be a lot of cycling fans in Britain that are going to be very, very excited about that. Following that, they take the ferry across the channel to Dunkirk, and then it's the Tour de France. It includes a dip into Belgium, into Burgundy, and of course ends up with that great finish on the Champs-Élysées on Sunday, July the 29th. Interestingly, and I love it when they do this personally, the final individual time trial will be on the second to last day, Saturday, July the 28th, stage 19 from Cognac to Angoulême. God, I butcher that, I'm sure. 55-kilometer individual time trial. And you know what? It's quite possible that it could be that time trial that, depending on how the race has gone, could decide who wears the yellow jersey on the podium in Paris on that final day. Now, speaking of the yellow jersey wearer in Paris, every year when they have one of these announcements of the new Tour de France route, they typically invite the previous year's winner. Well, guess what? Floyd Landis wasn't even invited, and there was a lot of speculation as to whether or not Floyd would even be shown in the recap video that they always show at these events of the previous year's tour. Well, indeed, doping did play a part in the video. It started out with the whole Puerto affair that we talked about a few minutes ago and the fact that all those riders were barred from participating in the Tour de France at the last minute. And then it ended with Floyd up on the podium on the Champs-Élysées in his yellow jersey. But then it turned into a mirror and the mirror was cracked. Now, we talked about this today on the Spokesman podcast, and I invite you to go to www.the-spokesman.com to hear what we had to say about that. Personally, I think that they were really trying to say two things here by showing the cracked mirror with Floyd Landis. Number one, obviously, I think that the entire cycling world was in some ways shattered and broken last year by the doping scandals that occurred. And of course, the Tour de France was marred by its own doping scandal with the allegations against Floyd Landis. Whether or not he's guilty or not, it certainly did mar what is one of the most beautiful sporting events in the world every year. So I understand a little bit why they did it. I think that they certainly, in a lot of the things the race directors have said in the past about Lance Armstrong, I think they could have been even more harsh against Floyd. And I think that it's possible that they were actually a little bit subdued in what they said. So what about some reactions to the course itself? Well, Eddy Merckx said, it looks like a pretty normal tour. Not easy, but not with too much climbing. It's too early to think about who might be the favorites. Yeah, it is. You have to wait and see who is in form. David Miller said, my first thought is that it resembles this year's route with the long time trials and the number of summit finishes. As for favorites, and he's going to pick them, the route looks good for Sastry, Vinokourov, and Valverde. Personally, I'd like to see Sastry win. Race director Christian Prudhomme said the fifth stage will be interesting, as it's quite a hilly stage, and that could cause some early splits in the contenders. And finally, Bradley Wiggins had to say, for me, as a Londoner, the best two stages of the race are the first two, and there will be a lot of attention placed on them. The prologue will be my main goal, and there could be a British head-to-head there between me and David Miller. Now, speaking of Bradley Wiggins and David Miller, not to plug the spokesman too much, but we talked about the fact that both of those riders are going to be participating in the Revolution Track Series in Great Britain here coming up in the next few weeks, and that that could be quite a battle between Miller and Wiggins as that's coming up. Now, interestingly, one of the other stories that came out of the whole announcement of the tour route, and as you know, the UCI and the Grand Tours have been really battling it out over the Pro Tour schedule and the Pro Tour teams, the number of teams that are in the Pro Tours and who can come to the Grand Tours. And that row is still going on. They're still fighting between the Grand Tours and the UCI. But interestingly, Pro Tour manager Alan Rumpf said recently that the UCI would like to see shorter Grand Tours because they feel that it's quite possible that the length of the Grand Tours is what's actually contributing to the doping that's going on. In other words, it's simply, you have to be a superhuman to be able to participate in a Grand Tour and be successful at it without doping. He said, quote, if the UCI audit shows that the length or the difficulty of the major tours is identified as a factor in doping, the UCI will not hesitate to act. My question, of course, is what exactly are they going to do? The Grand Tours have already said that they're willing to break away and start their own series and just forget the Pro Tour and invite whoever they want to come to the Grand Tours. I personally don't believe that it's the length of the tours that's causing the doping. I think that the doping is being caused by competitive forces, by pressure, by monetary pressure on the cyclists, and by pressure from the teams. So I don't think it's the length. As somebody on the spokesman said this morning, hey, you know what? Doping would go on in professional tiddlywinks if they thought that it would help give them an edge and help them gain some money. And I think that that's probably true. So I think the UCI can say whatever they want, and they can bluster, and they can threaten that they're going to do something. But quite honestly, when all is said and done, the Grand Tours are going to do whatever they want. And you know what? These tours have been these lengths, or at least close to these lengths, for decades. And I don't think that Pat McQuaid or anybody else, or Alan Rumpf or anyone else at the UCI is going to be able to come in and successfully tell them how to run their races. Okay, and if you've got pedals from Time Sport, this is something you're going to want to listen up to. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, in cooperation with Time Sport, last week announced a voluntary recall of Time pedals. These are Time RXS Titan Carbon, RXS Carbon, RXS, and RXE bicycle pedals. There were about 18,000 of these sold through bicycle stores, mail order, online bicycle dealers throughout the United States and perhaps the world from October 2004 through August of 2006, and these sold for between $75 and $300. The problem here is that the pedal's bearing cap can fall off, causing the pedal to come off the bike, and this, of course, would pose a fall hazard for riders. According to Time, they've received reports of 8 incidents in which the pedal came off the bike, resulting in minor injuries. As always, if you've got these, please stop using them right away. Contact Time Sport International. They will inspect your pedals, and if necessary, you'll get a free repair. For more information, I've put links in the show notes to Time's recall page as well as to the CPSC's recall page, or you can call Time Sport at 1-800-240-8051. Well, here's an update to a story we brought you last week here on the Fredcast, and it was the story of Beth Bailey in Grand Rapids, Michigan, here in the United States. If you'll remember, on October 15th, someone stole Ms. Bailey's special bicycle. Now, remember, she was partially disabled due to a couple of strokes that she had, and she had this special bike that had adult training wheels and baskets on it so she could go back and forth to the store or get back and forth to the bus stop. And someone stole her bike from the bus stop on October 15th. The story appeared in newspapers in Michigan and on the internet, and a fund was set up to try to get Ms. Bailey a new bicycle so she'd be able to get around. And sure enough, thanks to an association called the Crime Victim Foundation, as well as State Representative William Van Regenmorter from Georgetown Township there in Michigan, they were able to put this fund together, and they had donations coming in from all over the place. And last week, Ms. Bailey was able to get a brand new bike. She said, "It's really a nice bike. It's wonderful." She never thought that she would actually get a new bike. Instead, she was mad. All she wanted was her old bike back. Well, instead, the Crime Victim Foundation, which compensates crime victims, was able to cut the check for the brand new bike to the Freewheeler Bike Shop there in Grand Rapids. She ended up getting a Diamondback Wildwood bike, complete with side saddle baskets and custom-built training wheels. And according to one of the spokesmen from the Crime Victims Foundation, they said, "These are people in desperate need. In some cases, it's more important that they know someone cares, and hopefully it restores their faith in the community." Well, if Ms. Bailey wanted her faith restored, it wasn't just in the fact that she got a brand new bicycle thanks to community donations and involvement. One retired doctor who asked not to be identified donated a 1994 Mercury Marquis so that she would be able to drive wherever she needed to go when the weather got bad. Said Bailey, "I never expected this. Never did. Never did." Congratulations, Ms. Bailey. And thank you to the citizens of Grand Rapids, Michigan, and anyone else who donated in restoring our faith in humanity. And finally tonight, a story that comes from KVUE-TV News in Texas, saying that neighbors of Lance Armstrong's are upset with him for potentially fouling the local swimming hole. There's a lake that is adjacent to Lance's property and that's shared by 18 local landowners called Dead Man's Hole. And Lance started a dam project on his property about a year ago. And as a result of doing this dam, he sent a rush of sediment into the swimming hole. According to the neighbors, this turned the swimming hole's water from crystal clear into a murky mess. Now, according to one of the neighbors, quote, "Nothing's been done here to clean this up. Nothing. He's not taken one shovelful out of the stuff in there. That's what we'd like him to do." Earlier this month, according to the story, Lance told the Houston Chronicle that he started the dam project under bad advice. And he said, quote, "I'm really sorry they're upset, but I've done everything I can do, and I'm going to continue to ultimately fix it." According to the story, Lance has already spent $500,000 fixing the dam project that he abandoned. And he's in addition, some of that money has also gone to help clean up the creek and the swimming hole. And it looks like he'll be doing a little bit more. So, yes, Lance did foul the swimming hole, but it looks like Lance is also trying to unfoul the swimming hole. And that's going to do it for the news for the week of October the 30th, 2006. Hey, this is probably a good time for me to remind you that I'm still looking for submissions for the 2007 Fredcast Holiday Gift Guide. I'd like you to send in your ideas to a special email address. It's giftguide@thefredcast.com. That address again, giftguide@thefredcast.com. Please, before November the 20th, send in your ideas. I've already gotten some great submissions. I'd like to get a lot more. And again, we're going to be having a special giveaway. I'll be picking one of the submitters at random to receive a great cycling gift of their own. So please, send in your 2007 holiday gift guide ideas to giftguide@thefredcast.com. I thank you. Your fellow Fredcast listeners, thank you. I got an email from listener Rudy from Washington, D.C. this week. He was commenting on the story that we did last week on riding at night and how to outfit yourself properly for riding at night. And he said that he appreciated the story that I did, but he said that I might want to look at an expert authority on low light riding. And specifically, he pointed me to Randonneurs USA. And if you don't know what that organization is, and I think I've mentioned it here on the Fredcast before, this is the governing body of randonneuring in the United States. Randonneuring is long distance and ultra distance cycling, things like Boston, Montreal, Boston, and Paris, Brest, Paris. I know we've talked about brevets before, and these are the people who put together brevet rides and sanction the brevet series that go on all over the country. Now, you can imagine when you're doing a ride like Paris, Brest, Paris, you're going to end up having to ride at night. And so Randonneuring USA has come up with some guidelines that Rudy wanted to point us to when it comes to riding at night. And specifically, he said that the randonneurs do not believe that Illuminite clothing is considered to be adequately reflective for nighttime riding. And he says in his email, the reasons for this are many. Illuminite doesn't reflect enough to meet the rather stringent regulations acquired by Audax Club Parisien, the governing body of the Paris-Brest-Paris ride. Additionally, most Illuminite clothing doesn't place enough reflective material in critical areas to meet the ACP regulations. A case of fashion over function in this case. Rudy goes on to say, while I use an Illuminite vest for night riding around greater DC, I've also had to bite the bullet and get something more robust for night rides in more rural areas. There's another option to the reflective vest, and I think that's what Rudy's talking about that he must have to wear. This is a belt with a reflective triangle, and sometimes it's called a Sam Brown belt, not to be confused with the Sam Brown belts that your local constabulary wears. These are nice because they tend to be a bit more aero than the usually loose-fitting reflective mesh vests, and the triangle-style reflector adheres to most experts' recommendations for the best visibility. It can also be doffed without too much hassle, which is a big plus. So I put a link in the show notes to RUSA's lighting requirements, and I think it's definitely a great supplement to what we talked about last week, and I want to thank Rudy for sending in that recommendation in his email. A few weeks ago, I was leading a training ride in the run-up to the MS-150, and I met a gentleman on this training ride. This was down in San Diego, named Michael. And while we were riding along, Michael told me about a ride that takes place in Southern California specifically for fifth graders. And I think it was because we were talking about the fact that I had kids and my kids were a certain age and how involved they got in cycling and things like that. And Michael told me about this ride called the Ride Across California. And I was really intrigued with the concept of a group of 10 and 11-year-olds being able to ride their bikes all the way across the state of California, 250-some-odd miles. I thought that was a really interesting idea and a great way to get kids involved in cycling and a great way to build their confidence and get them involved in a sport that we all love and is something that they can do for the rest of their lives. Michael put me in contact with Gary Rossi. Gary is one of the organizers at the current time of the Ride Across California. And I did an interview with Gary last week, and I found it really, really interesting because we talk so much about racing and about all the Freddy things that we do with our gadgets and our gizmos. And what I really loved about interviewing Gary was really hearing about what it can do to build the confidence and the self-esteem in a child and how cycling plays such a part in that. So I hope that you'll enjoy this interview that I did with Gary earlier last week about the Ride Across California. Welcome to the show. Tell everybody what makes the Ride Across California different than all these centuries and half centuries that we all do. Who does the Ride Across California?
Fifth graders from our local school district and their parents during a spring break. And the reason they do it, it's a project that teaches them the ideas and the concepts of developing a goal and accomplishment, planning all the things that you need to do for training in order to succeed at your accomplishment, and then putting forth and implementing that plan and then being able to accomplish that goal of succeeding in attaining that goal.
And when you say your local area, what area are we talking about?
This is in Rancho Penasquitos in San Diego, California.
And, I mean, before we get into the details of it, where did the idea come from? How long have you been doing it? Tell me a little bit about the history.
First of all, the history about it is there was a fifth grade teacher at Deer Canyon Elementary and a principal at another one of the local elementary schools. And they read a book that was titled, Hey Mom, Can I Ride My Bike Across America? They both read the book. And they said, hey, this would be a great project for fifth graders to do. The first year they did it, they had about 5 to 6 kids and a couple parents, and they were self-contained, and they rode across the entire state. This year is the 17th year. The reason I got involved in it, 5 years ago, my daughter was a fifth grader, and I became the lead chase driver of all the support vehicles, and my wife and my daughter rode. And then 2 years ago, my son was a fifth grader, and I rode the ride with him. And I've continued to participate in the ride. This last year, the fifth grade teacher has now retired, and I've become the ride coordinator because I feel it is so beneficial to fifth graders to do this.
Now, this is quite a feat for a fifth grader. I've had a fifth grader. She's now in eighth grade, and I've got a fifth grader now, and I know what it's like for fifth graders. You talked about them creating a plan and implementing it. How involved are the kids in their training plan and in the implementation of the ride?
Well, we help with the plan. We've developed over the years a series of rides starting in October, and we go through and we do a step phase. The first couple of rides are 3 miles. Then we have another set of rides that are 6 miles. Then we do another series of rides that are anywhere from 15 to 20. And then we build up to 30, 35 miles on the hill climbs for the preparation of some of the hills that we come in contact with along the ride across California.
What kind of speeds do you find as the kids are trained and they actually are on the ride? What kind of speeds are the kids able to maintain?
It really varies. Anywhere from from 3 and 4 miles an hour to about 10, 11, and 12 miles an hour.
And, of course, they have their friends and their parents there to help cheer them along.
Yes, absolutely.
How does the support work? You mentioned the support vehicles that are on the route. So maybe take us through a typical day on the ride. Tell us what the kids are doing from the time they wake up until the time they probably pass out at night.
Well, my background, I've spent 20 years in the Navy, and when I have a schedule to go along with, we usually get up at 6 o'clock, and I have a CD that has Reveille on it, and they get a kick out of that. So at 6 o'clock, I play Reveille out of my truck, and that usually gets everybody roused up. Depending on where we're at, in most cases, we have a local 4-H club that provides our breakfast for us. So as people are tearing down their tents, because it's all tent camping, as they're tearing down their tents, they can go in shifts and eat breakfast. They break down their tents, and we leave more or less plus or minus 5 minutes at 8 o'clock every morning. Then we ride until about 10 o'clock, and we have a snack break, and we do that self-contained because we have a U-Haul truck that has all the camping equipment plus all our snacks that we pre-plan in the morning, so when they come in they can have a snack, they get something to drink, they can rest for a little bit, and then as we get about 30 or 40 riders, we'll head out again. Then we have we stop at lunch anywhere from between 11:30 to 1 o'clock depending on the speed that they're going. Like I said, a slow rider can be about 3 or 4 miles an hour, to the faster ones can be 11, 12, 13 miles an hour riding. Then we have another break about 3 o'clock, again the same thing. Usually it's the same parents that had the morning snack get the afternoon snack. And then in the evening, anywhere from 3 o'clock to about 5, we end up at our final destination, which is usually a schoolhouse along the way. And they're mostly all one-building schoolhouses that have a history to show the children that here they live in basically a suburb of downtown San Diego, but there is so much diversity across the state of California that they're really amazed at the different types of schoolhouses that other children their same age attend.
So this is a learning experience for the kids, not just about self-reliance and about accomplishing a goal, but also a bit about the state of California.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another big thing is, like I said, a lot of these kids have never been anywhere else except for the Rancho Penasquitos, Poway area, and this gives them the opportunity to show the diversity of our great golden state of California.
So what's an average day's ride? How much distance are you covering in a typical day?
On the average, about 35 miles per day.
And tell me where you start and where you end up and how that works and where you go through along the ride.
We start in, it's right at the a tip between California, Mexico, and Yuma, Arizona. The first day is a very short day of 18 miles. We start at this, matter of fact, it's probably about 100 yards from the Mexican border. All the children and the parents, they dip their back tire in the Colorado River.
And then Gary went on to tell me about how over the next week, the fifth graders and their parents and the whole support crew go through some of the most beautiful terrain that California has to offer, starting at the Colorado River at the Arizona border, heading out through the Anza Borrego Desert, stopping at the Aguas Calientes hot springs, where the kids get a chance to actually see and feel what it's like to experience a hot spring, stopping at a naval air station where, thanks to Gary's connections, the kids are able to use the swimming pool that the naval aviators get to use all the time, going through Indian reservations, through what Gary's described as some of the most beautiful terrain of the trip, on up to the Banner Grade, and then into Julian, which is a gorgeous part of California up in the mountains. The kids actually race up to the top, and last year a girl won the race. And once the all along the route, they're being supported by community organizations, 4-H clubs. They get to stop at schools along the way, one-room schoolhouses where they're hosted by the schools. Restaurants take care of them. It's the entire state coming together for these fifth graders traveling across California until finally, when they leave Julian, they spend the night about a mile away from the world-famous San Diego Wild Animal Park. They then head to Escondido to that fifth grade teacher's house, the one who started this entire ride 17 years ago, and he hosts them for a waffle breakfast for all 200 and some odd people in the entire entourage before finally heading out for the last leg of their trip toward Carlsbad State Beach, where Gary picks up the story.
And then what we do, which is a real neat thing, throughout the week, we tell the parents to look for those children, those fifth graders, that have exhibited the ideals of teamwork, leadership, participation, tenacity, perseverance, because depending, every year is different when they really weather the different climate changes. We may have headwinds, we may have a little bit of rain, we may have beautiful skies, but every child throughout the week experiences some adversity, some second guessing of why the heck am I doing this? Mm-hmm. This is crazy. They're second guessing themselves, self doubts of am I going to make it? So we look for those kids that can really push through. And when we get just before we hit Pacific Coast Highway, we identify those 4 to 6 fifth graders, and they lead us down Pacific Coast Highway. And it's really neat to see these six fifth graders leading 150 cyclists down Pacific Coast Highway.
That is really cool. What do you do when you get to the beach after, of course, you've had all the hugs and kisses from the family members who haven't seen their kids and the parents in a week? What happens when you get to the beach?
Every child and every rider now put their front tire in the Pacific Ocean. So they started with dipping their back tire in the Colorado River, and they end with putting their front tire in the Pacific Ocean.
That is really cool. I have to tell you, this is the second time you've told me the story, because you and I spoke earlier in the week. And I told you this then, and it's true now. And maybe it's just because I'm the dad of a fifth grader, you know, and a dad of two daughters. But I hear this, and I get goosebumps. This just sounds like an amazing trip, an amazing journey. You must get some really great feedback and some people who want to keep coming back year after year.
We get alumni. Matter of fact, like we spoke about earlier, we have a group of four brothers and their father that come back every single year. We get alumni all the time. The gentleman that rode with you is going to volunteer his services this year. Last year, the California State Cycling Champion heard about it. His wife is a friend of the lady that teaches at Ramona Community School. She told her husband, and when we rode up Banner Grade, he rode up Banner Grade and stopped when he met another child. He stopped and talked to him for 3 or 4 minutes. He rode all the way to the top of the Banner Grade, then he rode all the way back and stopped again. He did that 5 times.
Good training ride for him, too, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. But no, you know, the biggest thing, David, is the reason I keep on coming back is here you have kids that start a journey, and they go through a variety of different feelings. They don't know if they can complete it, but they keep on plugging through, and you see the change in their behavior, you see their change in their temperament, you see their change in emotions, but it's all for the best, especially when in South Carlsbad State Beach, Ponto Beach, and they see the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, and I'm guessing just by listening to you and knowing, you know, that the parents are there to help their kids, I'm guessing everyone who starts finishes, don't they?
Oh, yes. Yes, well, that's one of the things that we do. They go through all the training rides, and they can stop, but we keep on trying to root them on and get them motivated. But the one thing we say that when they have their parents come out to the starting place,
mm-hmm.
once they start, they cannot quit.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's excellent. I have a question for you, and I don't mean
sure.
to make this personal here, but now I know that this is pretty much restricted to your local area there in San Diego, but you think you might let a dad from L.A. and his fifth grade daughter join you this year?
I think we can arrange that.
I think that we would love that. I have to tell my daughter, Emily, and I think that we would love to join you on a ride like this. I know that you know you've got it close to your area, but this sounds too cool, and if you would allow that, it would be great.
Oh, absolutely.
Gary, I want to thank you for doing this interview. This is really sounds like an amazing event, and I'm going to run out and talk to my daughter, Emily, and get ourselves signed up. So, and I'll report on it here on the show, and I think I'll try to get Emily to report on it on the show as well, and we'll really be looking forward to that. Thanks again for doing the interview.
Well, thank you very much for having me, David.
Well, I know that interview was kind of long, and I hope that you enjoyed it. I am totally intrigued by the concept of taking children on an adventure like this on their bikes and using cycling as a way to build up their self-esteem and their confidence. And I came home and I told Emily about it. And yes, we are going to do this ride. And Emily is going to be doing the reports for the Fredcast every single day at the end of her ride. Tired or not, from our tent while we're camping, she's going to be our roving reporter for the Fredcast. We are really looking forward to doing this. And again, I want to thank Gary for taking the time to do that interview. Okay, let's quickly get through the rest of the show. Just a couple of things left for you. First of all, some upcoming events. The first one is on November the 18th. This is the San Francisco Velo Swap. Now, according to the website, the Velo Swap is an important congregation of cyclists, not only for buying and selling, but for socializing. Basically, this is what they're touting as the world's largest consumer bicycle and sports expo, and it is the place to see, swap, buy, and sell every imaginable bike part and accessory. The San Francisco Velo Swap takes place again on November the 18th, and it will benefit IMBA, the International Mountain Bike Association. Unfortunately, I missed the fact that there was a Velo Swap in Denver just last weekend. So for those of you that are in Northern California, here's your chance. And of course, I've put a link in the show notes to the website. Also coming up very soon now, this weekend, November the 5th, is the New York City Marathon. Now, normally I wouldn't mention that here because, after all, this isn't a running podcast. It's a cycling podcast. But I mention it because Lance Armstrong himself is planning on competing in this year's New York Marathon, and it is something that we can all watch out for. So good luck to Lance as he gets ready for the New York City Marathon. Okay, got a couple of shout-outs for you tonight. First, to a couple of podcasting friends that I wanted to mention. The first one is to Keith from the I Beg to Differ podcast, and Keith sent along the following voicemail message.
Hey, David, it's Keith from the I Beg to Differ show. I just wanted to give a shout to you and to say how much I've really enjoyed listening to all the episodes of the Fredcast. It made cycling a lot more fun this year. And I just want to let you know, I'm actually wearing my Fredcast t-shirt, which I got off of Cafe Press. And it's a great deal, and it's a great shirt. And I think every member of the Fredcast listening community should go out and get one to help you out. And just to let you know, it is a balmy 34 degrees Fahrenheit here. And yes, we are still cycling, so when you complain about it being cold at 60, you get no sympathy from us up here in Ottawa, Canada. Anyways, great show. Keep them coming. Bye.
Well, thank you, Keith, for sending that voicemail. Yeah, I already told you, I know I'm a wimp because, you know, it gets in the 50s and I don't want to go outside because it's too cold to ride. But a couple of points there. First of all, Keith's podcast, which he does with his wife, it's called the I Beg to Differ podcast. I put a link in the show notes. It's ibegtodifferlibsyn.com. Go ahead and check it out. And Keith, I want to thank you for your comments about the Fredcast t-shirts. I actually bought a couple and I love them. I wear them everywhere. So if you're in the LA area and you see somebody wearing a Fredcast t-shirt, you never know. It just might be me. Thanks again, Keith, for the voicemail. I appreciate it. One more podcasting shout out that I have to give, and I've given it here before, but I've got to do it again. I want to give a shout out to my buddies, Aaron and Kristen from the Manic Mommies podcast. They don't think I listen, but I do. And here's the proof, because I heard this on my ride just the other day, and it put a huge smile on my face. Here's Aaron and Kristen from their most recent show.
He's a lot of men.
So I thought everyone would like to know.
You think a lot of men have smoother legs than us?
Yeah.
There are a lot of cyclists out there.
Okay, well, yeah.
Go to the Fredcast to find out more.
I love David from the Fredcast.
Isn't he the sweetest man ever?
He's so nice.
We met him out in California.
I hope you're listening.
Shout out to David from the Fredcast. Steve also loves David from the Fredcast.
All right.
Okay, so yeah, I was listening. I was listening on my ride a couple of days ago. And like I said, I heard that and I just couldn't stop laughing. So thank you, ladies, for the shout out. And yes, we love your show. It's at manicmommies.com. Shout out to Aaron and Kristen and, of course, to Steve as well. Thanks, ladies. Another shout out to listener Daniel from Perth, Australia, who sends along a cold weather tip, even though he's heading headlong into summer down under. And he says, if you wake up on a cold morning and you want to go for your ride, but you're dreading sucking in that cold air, something that really seems to help is to put warm water into your water bottle. Obviously not boiling, not too hot, but just warm enough to help relieve that feeling you get in the back of your throat when you're breathing in that cold air. So I thought that that was a really great tip. And finally, a shout out to listener David from the UK, who sent along another tip that had to do with night riding. And this was to use pop-up stickers instead of just plain reflective tape. And if you don't know what these are, I've put a link in the show notes. Basically, these are reflective stickers that are just a little bit more attractive than just putting tape all over your bike. So go ahead and check that out at the link in the show notes. And David, thank you so much for sending that along. That is going to do it for tonight. I want to thank you for listening and thank you for staying subscribed. I'd like you to do me a favor, like the Manic Mommies always say, go out and tell three friends this week about the Fredcast. Let's see if we can't get those audience numbers up. And another great way to increase the audience of the show is to vote for us at Podcast Alley. There's one more day left in October, and then it's an entirely new month. So you can vote twice this week. Go to PodcastAlley.com, vote for the Fredcast, or of course you can do that right there on the homepage at www.thefredcast.com. While you're there, think about going and checking out the forums. Just click that forum tab at the top of the page, and you can interact with all sorts of great Fredcast listeners, including our wonderful moderator, Rick Plow13. We appreciate all of his help. Have any questions or any comments on the show, go ahead and send them to my email address. That's thefredcast@gmail.com. You can send me a text message or send me an audio comment. You can also send an audio comment by clicking that button on the page that says send an audio comment, or you can send me a voicemail, just like Keith did, at area code 206-203-FRED. Just like we do every week, PodSafe cycling music comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called Rest, and it's by Rako/KRB. And I've put a link in the show notes to their website, their site on the Podshow site, as well as a link where you can go to iTunes and buy their song. I hope that you'll consider doing that for any of the artists that you hear on the Fredcast. Like to support the independent artists that support podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week with another action-packed episode of the Fredcast. Until then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.